met, friends. I'm Steph Midlock.
And I'm Jude Bays.
Welcome to Athrobeth, a podcast exploring the arboreal linguistics of Tolkien's Legendarium. Do we have any corrections cul-de-sac this week, Jude?
No. Surprisingly, nobody called me on my bullshit last episode. I'm sure I made mistakes, but I guess nobody decided to call me on them.
That's fine.
That's very polite of all of you.
I'm sure that there's somebody holding their tree of tongues just ready to frickin' open up after this one. We'll see. Yeah. No, I thought last week was amazing. Last episode was amazing.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm also biased because I'm on the show. So, whatever.
Announcements?
Can I go first? Because mine is silly.
Yes, please.
Mine is not silly. It's not an announcement. I just, instead of a corrections cul-de-sac, I wanted to just give a shout out to this Twitter account that I found that I know all of you already follow. But if you don't, you got to check it out. So it's called On This Day in LOTR. And it's just like they basically use the Tolkien's timelines and say, like, you know, what was going on today's date, but in like Lord of the Rings. And it's great. And you can add funny GIFs because that's what I do now. So I'm sure they're like, God, I wish this girl hadn't found us. But anyway, it's really cool. And they have really nice pictures and stuff. So check them out. They are at On This Day in LOTR.
Nice.
At Twitter. So check it out.
Other announcements. I will be at a Catacon in 2 weeks.
What are the dates of a Catacon, Jude?
A Catacon is the 8th through the 10th of November, which will be about a week after this episode comes out. I will be there, loaded up, thanks to Steph, with plenty of swag, both old and new. So even if you've already had our swag foisted on you, there will be new swag for you to have.
Yeah, there's new swag. There's new emo swag.
Yeah.
Check it out. It's awesome. I'm so sad I'm not going to be there this year. So, Jude, you need to give me a full report.
I definitely will.
Athrobeth has sponsored a table at a Catacon this year.
That's right.
So I would like a picture of you next to our glorious table flag in all of its glory.
If you happen to find our table flag, please send us a picture of it.
Oh, that would be awesome. Yeah, if any of our listeners are there. Oh, man, do it. That'd be so cool. Yeah. If not, that's cool, too. But, you know, whatever.
Yeah, I will have the Athrobeth pin on my badge. So if you see me, please come up and say hello. But, yeah, so that'll be the 8th through the 10th.
And that's the year of our Lord, 2019. Just in case you're listening in the future.
Yep.
Jude loves hugs, so definitely just run up and give him a big old hug. Right? I make this joke every time. He goes to a convention, and every time he gets mad at me, he does not love hugs.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, definitely let us know how that goes. I hope you have a great time. That's going to be awesome.
Yeah, it should be. I'm a big fan of a Catacon, so I'm expecting it to be a good time. All right.
So what are we doing in this episode, Jude?
So as you recall, last episode, we talked about the various languages of Tolkien's Legendarium, but we looked at them through the lens of how they were developed externally, how Tolkien developed these languages in his lifetime and how he was composing them and developing them over time. We're going to take a slightly different angle this time. Now we're going to look at them, how the languages grew and developed within Middle-earth. How the languages differentiated and grew over time. And there's still a little bit of an element of the external in here because we're going to look at the different ways that the story of how these languages grew changed over time as Tolkien sort of changed that story over time. That'll be how we look at them, is how these languages developed and grew and split and divided within Middle-earth.
Cool. That's going to be awesome.
Yeah, it's fun. I had a lot of fun researching this, so.
Well, thank you for doing it, because just looking over the outline, it looks very thorough and complicated, and I'm so glad that I didn't have to do any of it, so thank you.
All right, well, we have many linguistic paths to tread, so let's begin. So Before we dive into this completely, I do want to call out one thing about this. Researching these last two episodes, I mean, I do a lot of research for this podcast, but these two episodes really emphasized for me, if you follow my Twitter, first, I'm sorry, and second, you may have seen me complaining about just how much there is of Tolkien to dig through when you want to find something. There's just so much. People see Lord of the Rings, the three novels, and The Hobbit, and maybe you dig a little deeper, you see The Silmarillion. But there's so much. Once you get into the scholarly side of things, there is a phenomenal amount of material written by Tolkien or exegesis on Tolkien, and then further investigation into Tolkien's materials that when you're doing research like this, you have to dig through. We're going to be looking, so for example, as we'll get into in a little bit here, and you'll see there's sort of three phases of development of the story of the Elven languages. And figuring out exactly when the third phase happened and exactly how the different parts of the third phase of these Elvish languages kind of happened required me to dig through a bunch of different weird places to find exactly where things were. Because I had notes on stuff happening, but I needed to go down and look at sources because I don't like to just say stuff. I want to know that there's sources to it. But to find all that and to make sure that I was comfortable with my notes and I was comfortable saying stuff, I was easily 2/3 of the time I spent researching this was just like backing up my recollection of things. And it really did. It kind of reminded me of just how much material there is to go through. I went through like 6 different books trying to figure out where the bloody hell, like, God, what was it I was trying to look for? One of the early versions of Sindarin was first referenced or something like that. So I did a little back of the envelope math. And there is approximately 10,400 pages of material written by Tolkien or his son Christopher about Tolkien's stuff.
Wow.
That's Lord of the Rings, The Silmarillion, The Histories, which is commentary and exegesis on those works, but also a lot of new material like the Athrabeth and so on and so forth. And then Beren and Luthien and all that stuff, but not counting anything, also the letters and stuff like that, but not anything non-Middle Earth related. That's putting aside even Smith of Wooten Major, Father Christmas stuff. That's just the specifically Middle Earth related stuff.
Wow.
And then you've got to take into account all of the academic journals, which also publish unpublished Tolkien material, original materials. There's 50 issues of Vinyar Tangwar, 132 issues of Mythlore, 22 issues of Parma Eldalamberen, 161 issues of Amonhen, and 58 issues of Malorn, all of which publish, not every one of which publish new material that Tolkien, unreleased Tolkien material. Vinyar Tangwar and Parma Eldalamberen almost always have something new. But all of these journals are doing interesting research and exegesis and scholarly work on this material in many cases. My point being, there's a fuck ton of stuff to go through when you're trying to do research. So it's very exciting and interesting work, but sometimes it's also very like drudgery trying to figure out exactly where you found this reference and made a note of it and didn't write down the fucking sources. So thanks, Past Jude. But yeah, there's so much there. I think people don't always appreciate just how much material was generated by Tolkien in his lifetime. It was a lifetime's worth of work. To give you a point of reference, now mind you, this is just the raw material. This isn't counting like exegesis on it, but there's only 1,300 pages of Shakespeare.
Wow.
Yeah.
So there's like quite a bit more Tolkien than there is Shakespeare.
Now, mind you, like I said, the histories are reprinting a lot of the original material and then doing exegesis on it. But still, just to give you sort of a, considering how much like scholarly work has been done on Shakespeare, right. I mean, right. It gives you a scope for why there is so much academic work now being done on Tolkien and how much potential work there can be done. There's plenty of material there to be worked on for generations to come.
Yeah. And like even within that body of, you know, 10,378 pages, you know, you've pointed out a few times that there are, you know, Tolkien rewrites stuff and goes back on certain things and changes things around. And so it's much more, it's not linear. It's very complicated to even unravel that. So there's a ton of material.
Yeah. All that material, even though it is often like going back through material, like, you know, this is all about several of those books are all about the Silmarillion. It's evolutionary. It's documenting the evolution of this work, which I think is interesting and valuable and meaningful. It's not just repetitive. So,
yeah, this can be very, I mean, when I look at these numbers of like all these different publications and all this like original work, it's really overwhelming, you know, to someone like me who's like just like a passing Tolkien fan, you know, in some ways. Yeah. Can you give any advice to someone who kind of wants to start like sinking their teeth in, but is feeling weird about it?
I don't want to intimidate people. Just read through the stuff that interests you.
Yeah.
Read the novels, read the Silmarillion. And then if you're still interested in the diving into the more academic stuff, start picking up the histories. The histories are varyingly dry, but there's a lot of really interesting stuff in there. Especially if you read it with an eye towards the pieces that you like. If you're a super huge Hobbit fan, you know, read the ones that are about the Hobbit. Well, no, that's not okay. There's some really amazing scholarship about the Hobbit that I would recommend for the histories of the there. Anyway, I'm getting off track. There's really fantastic scholarship about every piece of Tolkien's work, either in the histories or in other places. Ask around, come to our Discord. I'm always happy to talk about this. There's always interesting works that you can get into. So,
yeah, cool.
Anyway,
well, thanks for breaking it down for us. We appreciate it.
Yeah, I just thought it was interesting. So,
really what you're looking for is like, wow, good job, Jude. You did so much work to get through all that stuff.
No, not at all.
You are amazing and I appreciate it.
No, I just wanted to emphasize the, it came to mind as I was doing this research. Like I don't think it's always understood exactly how much material Tolkien generated, even though we talk about him writing his whole life on this stuff. It really,
he just
wrote all the fucking time and saved all of it like a weird pack rat. So thank God, because I love having it all. But man,
me too.
Who does that?
I don't know.
I mean,
amazingly
everybody before
crazy
1950,
people.
Apparently, because there's so many writers that we have a lot of their letters and stuff. But anyway,
it's so cool. I don't even have text messages from like a day ago. I don't know anything. Right? So it's very exciting.
All right. So let's talk about what we're doing here. We're going to be talking about the evolution of the internal history of Tolkien's languages.
And when you say internal, you mean within the world of Tolkien.
Yeah, within Middle-earth.
Okay, great.
We have a couple of primary sources here. The first is what's called the Tengwesta Quendarina. This is a source... It was originally written around 1937, thereabouts. It was originally published in 1937 and published in Parma Eldalamberan 18. Tengwesta Quendarina means the sounds of Quenya.
Hmm.
And is an essay that Tolkien wrote all about the various phonological aspects of Quenya at the time. The interesting part of it that we care about is a subsection called the Lambian Ontale, the Descent of Tongues, which tracks the various elven languages through some divisions. We're going to get into that a little bit later.
Okay.
But so that's the first one we care about. The second is what's called the Lammas, which is a very important piece. It's one of the, for like the study of linguistics, is a super, super important piece. It is a linguistic account attributed to a guy named Pengelod of Gondolin. There's some really interesting framing devices attached to it. So supposedly, this is one of the pieces that Elfwine, who was the human that sailed west in like, I think, what, the 9th century? Something like that. Mm-hmm. It was like the original translator of the Silmarillion. Like, this was one of the sources that he saw when he compiled the Silmarillion. Anyway.
Wow.
Something like that. There's a couple versions of it. Two of them. And it was published in The Lost Road. And it's a really interesting text. It's got a bunch of stuff about the various languages and various grammatical stuff, and for the development of the languages, like on a technical level, like how the languages were developed and thing for the language nerds, it's a very, very valuable piece.
Okay.
For us, it's really interesting because it lays out how the languages were all interrelated at an early stage of development. So we're going to talk about that too.
Cool. I'm going to call it the Lammas because it looks like that.
Yes, it's Lhammas. It's close.
Yeah. Lamamba.
The other sources is, I'm going to call it sort of generally Silmarillion-esque.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened is he had built up this narrative, and then he hit the Lord of the Rings in the 50s. So he started revising it around when he was writing the Quenta Silmarillion. He started making some revisions. And then he wrote the Lord of the Rings, and he did more revisions. So then there's like this period of revision, and then the Lord of the Rings comes out, and he does another period of revision. So the other sources are various other revisions later on. And so those come up in places like Notes in the Silmarillion, in the appendices of the Lord of the Rings, spare essays, like there's notes in Quendi and Eldar. There's like all over the place. We just get little bits and pieces of his evolving thoughts on how the elven languages sort of fit all together. So
cool. That's awesome.
So let's start. Let's get into it.
All right. Let's do it. Woo!
So there's four kind of Ur languages of Middle-earth. These are like
What languages? Ur?
Ur languages, sort of the primitive root languages of Middle-earth. The first is arguably the oldest language, and that's Valyrian. This is the language of the Valar. When they descended into Ea, they had no need of language, but when they became embodied, they took pleasure to make themselves a language to speak with words, even though they didn't really need it because they could, you know, telepathically.
Was that you being telepathic?
Yes.
I really liked it. That was a really good sound effect.
Thank you. Yeah. So in the earliest versions of Tolkien's thought, in the Lammas and in the Lammas and in the Lambian Ontale, all language in Middle-earth descends in one way or another from Valyrian.
Okay.
You have three sort of branches off Valyrian. The first is called Oromerian. This is also called Quendian because it was the language that Orme, the Valar, who discovered the elves as they were in their primitive state, taught the elves before they had any other language.
Yeah, he was the guy on the horse, right?
Yes, he was the guy on the horse. Of course, that's the part you remember.
Just staying on brand.
Yes, exactly. When he discovered the elves, they had no language in these early in these first two accounts. And he taught them this language that was based on Valyrian, which they then changed and softened for their own use. For the elves love the making of words, and this has ever been the chief cause of change and variety of their tongues. So they began to make changes to it, and that's when it became called Quendian, because it became kind of their root language, and all their languages descended from that. However, at the later on, by the time it became the Silmarillion, he had changed that. So that what drew him, if you remember in the Silmarillion, what draws Orome to the elves is the sound of their voices.
Right.
They already have speech by then. And in that conception, there's a language called Primitive Quendian, which is the language of Quivienen. And in this conception, the elves have developed their own language. And it is from this language, which does not have a Valyrian root, but is instead influenced by Valyrian, because they speak with Orome, and they eventually go and live with the Valar. And so there is some sort of cross admixture of Valyrian words into their language. But it is not descended from that language.
I'm so sorry to interrupt you. That was rude. No, please. I'm sorry. Sorry. Before Orome found them, were they speaking a language or no?
Yeah.
They were just like...
Well, like I said, it depends on which version.
Oh, okay.
In the first two versions, in the Lamas and in the... I always have trouble remembering. In the Lambian Ontale, in these early two versions, they were not speaking the language before Orome got to them. But in this last version, in the Silmarillion and later, yes, and they had their own language, this Quendian. Okay. Primitive Quendian language.
Which was not a descendant of Valyrian.
Yeah, it was its own thing.
Its own thing. Okay.
Took joy in assigning sounds and words to the things around them and developed their own language.
Okay. All right. I got you. Sorry. All right. I've got you.
Yep. The other branches of Valyrian that remained throughout the whole thing were Kuzdul, which is Dwarvish. When Aule invented the dwarves, he also invented a language for them, which was unlike Elvish in all ways, and very like his Dwarvish creations. And then the other is Orcish, which has a bunch of wild spellings in the early in the Lamas and the Lambian Ontale.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there's some really cool. We're going to excerpt these out. Both the Lamas and the Lambian have these really interesting like language family trees, which we'll excerpt out and we'll put up on the on I don't know Twitter or Instagram or something, so you can see a couple
website,
of them.
Yeah,
they're really really interesting to see how he evolved these trees, but you can see some of the goofy spellings that he went through for some of these languages, including like the Orcish. I think Orcish is like, let's see, in that version, he spells it like O-R-Q-U-I-S-H or something like that. Like,
oh, okay.
He's given it like a kind of a weird, wacky spelling. It's also sometimes called Melkian. So.
Oh, because of Melkor?
Yeah. Melkor. Yeah. Because that's where it comes from. It was devised by him as a language for the orcs, and it counts as a Valyrian language because it was devised by Melkor based on his own language, but he designed it to be very different, quote, perverted willfully to evil as he did all things, and the language of the orcs was hideous and foul and utterly unlike the language of the Quendi. So.
Well, I mean, that's kind of in the eye of the beholder a little bit, right? I'm sure the orcs were like, it's a romance language, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
It's rude. It's kind of rude, but okay. No, I'm with you.
So those are the sort of the base languages from which all other languages are descended. So now we're going to get into where we go from there. And we're going to start with the elves, which is obviously going to be the most... complex here. So
now you're going to break it down.
I'm going to break it down. And the biggest piece of that is what I'm kind of referring to here as the Elvish diaspora. Mm-hmm. Let's give a little backstory. For those of you that have not read the Silmarillion, or maybe haven't listened to a lot of episodes here and maybe don't know what the hell I mean when I speak of Cui Vienin. The elves have a wacky creation story a little bit, mm-hmm. where one day they all just wake up around the lake. And I wish I was kidding and making this more simple than it is. But I mean, they really just sort of start waking up, like sitting up and, oh, hey, look, a lake. That's kind of, according to myth, that's where elves come from. There was this lake that was made when one of the lamps that came before the trees, there were these lamps. And one of them smashed down and made this big old fucking lake that was called Cui Vienin, the Waters of Awakening. And it was around this lake that the elves first awoke. And they were hanging out around Cui Vienin when Orome found them. And he came to them and said, hey, what up? I'm a Valar. I'm one of your gods. I'm going to go tell my friends, the other gods, that we found you because we've been waiting for you because we, you know, knew you were going to be showing up eventually. So he fucks off back to Valinor and tells the other gods, and they have a big fight about what to do with them. Do we leave them there? Do we get them out of there? Because Melkor's fucking up Middle-earth a lot right now. They have a big fight, and finally they decide, rather than leaving them in Middle-earth, which is what some of the Valar wanted to do, they're going to take them out of Middle-earth and bring them back to Valinor. So he goes back to the elves, and he says, all right, y'all, let's hoof it. Let's get out of here. So he begins bringing the elves west towards Valinor. And this is this event shapes elven history completely. Which elves choose to follow and which do not, how long they take, where they go, utterly defines elven culture. And I mean, it's the defining act in elven history for the most part. This is important. To keep in mind, the first division that you get is the elves that do not follow Orome right off the bat. Then you have, those are the Avari, the elves that do not go with, that refuse the call. Then you have those that, so we'll get into that. We'll get into the divisions as we go. But basically, okay. There's the elves that don't follow. There's the elves that lingered out in the east. And then you have the elves that lingered in Beleriand. And then you have the elves that went to Valinor. Those are the basic, like the high level groupings of elves.
Sure. It's sort of like a question of faith, right?
Yeah.
Like if you have the faithful follow, I don't know, maybe?
More or less. Yeah. So those are, and the language groupings follow these groups of elves. So the various various essays that Tolkien wrote about this language diversification all sort of follow different accounts of how this division of the elder people happened.
Mm-hmm.
So the first of those is the Lambian Ontale. In this, he accounts six divisions of the Eldar, which accounts for six split and how that turns into six splits in the language.
Mm-hmm.
The first is the division of the Eldar and the Avari. So the Eldar being the ones who follow Orome, and the Avari are those who refuse. The second division being those who forsook the main host of Noldor and those who wandered. So there's a group of the followers of Nan who decide, fuck it. And they just sort of decide to hang out and split off from the Noldor while the rest of them continue. And so you get this group of Danian elves that have a distinct language that are similar to the Eldarin tongues, but are also more akin to the Avari tongues.
Okay.
The third division is when the Teleri were upon the march. They remained in Beleriand much longer than anyone else before they headed out. And so that's another group.
Mm-hmm.
The fourth division came from the splitting of the Teleri. Some came straight to Valinor, and some remained in Beleriand and never came at all. So then you have that group in Beleriand. The fifth division came from the Noldor, who remained in Tuna, and I swear to God, it's not that he made a holy city named Tuna because that's what the language told him to do, and he couldn't rename it to make it something less silly. There's a holy city named Tuna.
It's my favorite kind of sandwich. It's fine.
Yeah. There's a group of Noldor that live in this holy city named Tuna, and because they live there, their language separated from the other Noldor. And then there is a sixth division, wherein the Noldor who returned to Middle-earth, their language became separated from the Noldor that remained in Valinor.
Hmm.
And so if you look on this map, that sounds like a lot, but if you look on these graphs he drew, you can see all these splits as the languages differentiate by these splits in the Eldar people.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
If you had a speaker of like the sixth division and a speaker of the fourth division hanging out, are they different enough that they would not be able to understand each other, or are they sort of like some dialects?
Of them. No, some of them absolutely would not be able to speak to each other.
Oh, that's a pain.
Yeah. It depends. He calls out in some places where they would be, where they would have been able to speak to each other and where they would not.
Okay.
So it depends. Cool. Yeah. So then we have the Lammas. Sometime in, I guess what he said was later in 1937. So sometime in the same year, I guess this is on his mind, he goes back and he updates this with the writing of the Lammas, but he's been working heavily on the Quenta Silmarillion. So there's a lot of change that's happening now. And in it, he revises how he's writing this piece. So rather than trying to walk through this division, he's writing it from the point of view of someone within that world, giving mm-hmm. a survey of these languages. So instead, he gives an overview of the languages, and he breaks it down by where these languages exist. So first, he talks about the elves in Valinor, and he lists three languages there, and that is Quenya, which he refers to as Elf Latin, which was the favorite of the Lindar, who you will recognize if you've read the Silmarillion as being the Vanyar.
Mm-hmm.
This language changed very little, except for the addition of new words from the ancient forms. It was the common language of all the elves of Valinor and was the language of scholarship.
Hmm.
This would be true of pretty much all the forms of Quenya. This would be kind of the stand. These facts of Quenya would remain true pretty much forever.
Okay.
Then you get Noldorin, which was the daily language of the Noldor. And commiserate with their love of writing and words and invention was very changeful.
Hmm.
So this is interesting because Noldorin would later be completely changed. The history, the language that we're referring to here would later become Sindarin.
Oh, huh. Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. While writing The Lord of the Rings, Tolkien decided to completely alter the history of Noldorin into Sindarin.
Wow.
So what he ended up doing was completely removing it. He made the Noldor Quenya speakers and completely lifted Noldor as a language and moved it into Beleriand, as we'll see in a little bit.
Hmm.
So everything we know, all this stuff about Noldor here, about the Noldorin language, is going to be moved.
Okay, so it's different than in the final draft or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Gotcha.
Lastly, in Valinor, we've got Teleri, which is the language of the people of the same name. This has always been separate from the other languages, as the Teleri lived outside of, like, Valinor, the culture. On the shores of Valinor, they had their own little city, and they always maintained sort of a separate culture and had their own language.
Those poor guys. Things didn't end that great for them, if I remember correctly.
Not so much. We're going to talk about that. In Middle-earth, and then after the Noldor return, there's a bunch of languages. So there's the... when he's writing the Lammas, he refers to a group of elves as the Lembi, and these were the elves that never began the journey. So the Avari, basically.
Are they different than the Avari, or is just
it's
another
just a different
word?
Name for the Avari?
Okay, yeah, gotcha. They were like, no, we don't want to go. We're good. You guys go.
Yep.
We're going to stay at this lake. Cool, thanks. Yeah,
pretty much. So for the Lembi, he says only that these little is said of these languages, basically. He never really defines these languages much. He just notes that they exist.
Cool.
Then you've got the Lyquendi, the green elves. These were a people that basically, these were people descended from the Teleri, I believe, that were allied with Thingol's folk, and their language was much influenced by his people's. It was descended from primitive Quendian, but they lived in Beleriand and parts eastern of there. Then you have Ilkhorian. These people were descended from the Teleri as well, and this was the primary language of Beleriand. This language would be sort of superseded by Sindarin in later accounts, as we'll see.
Okay, so, and this is, so then this one, Ilkhorian, is that how you say it?
Mm-hmm.
That are, okay, gotcha. That doesn't exist in the end.
Yeah,
this is just everything. Okay.
Yeah.
I gotcha.
And then within the Ilkhorian, you had a couple of sub-dialects. Doriath, which was the language of Thingol.
Yeah.
And then Falassian, which was the language of the wandering Ilkhorian people in that region.
Oh, man.
And then lastly, I'm going through this kind of quick because a lot of this is doesn't matter super much.
Well, it's great to hear it, though, for sure. Yeah.
There were five varieties of Noldorin that evolved in Beleriand after the Noldor's return.
Okay.
There was the Noldorin of Mithrim and Fingolfin's folk. There was the Noldorin of Gondolin and Turgon's folk.
Sure.
There was the variety of Nargothrond and the house and folk of Finrod Felagund, that of Himring and the sons of Feanor, and then that of the Thrall Gnomes, the slaves of Morgoth.
Oh, those poor babies. Yeah, yeah, so a lot of those, I mean, those are major cities that you're saying, like Gondolin.
Yeah,
these are big places.
Yeah, basically every cultural center that the Noldor set up had its own dialect of Noldor.
Okay. Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah, because the Noldor were so changeful in speech, they tended to create dialects very quickly.
That's cool. I like it. It makes it seem more authentic.
Yeah. In the days after the War of the Wrath, the Noldorin of Gondolin was the only one that survived and became sort of the de facto language of the survivors of Beleriand.
Wow.
And would later become known as Gondolic or Middle Noldorin, and was much influenced by Falassian and Doriathrin.
Okay.
Yeah. So there's some interesting stuff to note here about this set of languages. Christopher Tolkien does some really interesting work in the commentary on the Lammas, mapping out the divisions in these Elvish languages and how over time Tolkien simplified these divisions, and how you can watch his thought about how these languages were related, simplifying and sort of cleaning up.
Yeah.
Interesting stuff. The Lammas is super interesting. It sounds really complex and sort of nerdy.
It does.
But it's actually really interesting. If this language stuff is at all interesting to you, or if these divisions of elves is at all interesting to you, it's actually worth a read. I really enjoyed reading it. So,
oh, cool.
It's dense, but it's fun. So now we get into the more familiar stages. And this is, I'm just calling this like the Silmarillion stage.
Okay.
Because this is inclusive of all the late stage stuff and is sort of commiserate with the version that you see in the published Silmarillion.
Okay, so this might be a little more familiar to me.
Yeah.
Okay, gotcha.
So in the last version, in Tolkien's final conception of the languages, a few things have changed. Namely, the Noldorin, or the language Noldorin, has become Sindarin.
Okay.
And its origin is switched from being the language of the Noldor to now a sister language of the Teleri, of whom the Sindar folk are closely related.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah. And the language divisions of the elves are simplified. somewhat, from the more complex family tree of the Lambian and the Lamas to a now more streamlined version.
Okay.
So we've got the first split, which is into Avarin, a branch of elves who did not follow Orome.
Okay.
And the Eladrin, who did.
Okay, so that's easy.
Yeah.
They went or they didn't go. Gotcha. Yeah.
Next, there's Quenya and Common Teleren, which is basically a big branch. Quenya, we know about. And then Common Teleren is a language of basically all the elves that did not reach Valinor.
But who followed Orome, but who did not make it all the way. Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
And under Common Teleren, we've got a series of languages. There's the language of Teleri.
Okay.
That was the language of those who did, the Teleri that did eventually get to Valinor. They just took their sweet damn time.
They were sightseeing. Leave them alone.
Yeah. Then you have the Nandorin, which was the dialect of those Umanyar, which is a word for those elves that began the journey but did not complete it, that remained in East Beleriand.
Okay, so they didn't even get over the continent.
Yeah, these are the folk of... sorry, go ahead.
No, that's it. They were the folk of...
These were the folk of Lorien and Mirkwood and the Sylvan Elves, like Legolas.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. Then you get Sindarin, which was a language family in and of itself of those elves that reached Beleriand, a group of Teleri elves that reached Beleriand, and then their king fucked off into a glade to stare at a lady for a few years, and they all stayed there to look for him.
Yeah, he did.
Which is a dick move, if you want my opinion. That's not
come
very
on.
Kingly.
Let a man stand in a field if he wants to. Come on.
I'm.
She must have been smoking. That's all I'm going to say.
I think Thingol ranks only marginally under Feanor for dicks. Oh.
That's a spicy take. Leave Thingol alone.
No, it's not.
It's spicy.
First of all, he abandons his people to stare at a woman in a field for a few years.
While they
are on a very important journey.
He was thirsty, okay?
He was thirsty.
I don't care. If you got to walk that far, you got to have that thirst quenched. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. We'll have an episode all about how much I dislike Thingol in the future.
Oh, I'm excited about that one.
Anyway... So they all stick around to wait for Thingol to show up, and they become the Sindar, the elves of the twilight is what they're called.
Aww, that's nice.
When he wakes up, he becomes the king, Elu Thingol, and he becomes their king, and they set up a little kingdom there, and Doriath, and that becomes the official language of Doriath. His dialect of Sindar.
It's the language of love, is what you're telling me.
Apparently not.
oh wait, why?
There. So the dialect of Sindar that is spoken in Doriath is apparently extremely archaic, because he was such a stodgy dude.
Okay.
There's a comment in, I can't remember where it's from. Somewhere in War of the Jewels, there's a comment about the fact that Doriathrin would to us sound like someone speaking the English spoken in Elizabeth the First's reign, not
ye
Elizabeth
oldie.
The Second. It's like ye olde English,
yeah.
Because it's like the language has not evolved at all compared to the rest of Sindarin.
Oh no!
So. It was a version of Turinbar's tale.
Oh yeah, I remember. Yeah,
where he's talking about the fact that his the little petty dwarf Dim is making fun of the Sindarin that he speaks because he learned Sindarin
in Doriath,
and his Sindarin is archaic because of that. Anyway. There is also a dialect of Sindarin called Falathrin, which is spoken in the Falas and in Nagathrond. And then there is North Sindarin, which is spoken in Dorthonion and Hithlum.
Oh
you
God,
don't care
so
what this
places.
Means?
No, I care.
I could go, I can go all of Beleriand and its realms on you and
describe
where all these places are.
Oh,
but,
my God. I actually would love a fucking map of Beleriand. Okay, so Beleriand, for anyone who doesn't know, I'm pretty sure is an area of Middle-earth that sank into the sea. It's gone now,
yes,
right?
That's
okay.
Correct.
But like all of these names you hear a lot in Ye Olde Silmarillion and all these things. And I'm like, where are these fucking places? God damn it. Is there a map? I need a
there
map.
There are some very good maps.
Give me a map, damn it.
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to get a map. That's my homework for next time. Get a damn map.
Well, yeah. Make a note and I'll put it, and I will put a good map of Beleriand in the show notes.
I'm writing get a damn map.
Okay.
Got it. Maybe that's why some people didn't want to follow Orome, because they were like, there's no fucking map. Okay.
Maybe.
All right.
So a fun. An interesting note about Sindarin and Quenya. Mm-hmm. When the Noldor, the Noldor in Valinor, after in this conception, were all Quenya speakers. And when they return over, there's two fun things about that. Fun in air quotes. First, there is a fun essay, which I did not put in the outline. I forgot to, but I'm going to extemporize because I know it pretty well. There is a fun essay called The Shibboleth of Feanor, which is one of my favorite. We've talked about this. One of my favorite examples of how big of a dick Feanor is.
Jude is not a fan of Feanor. I don't know if anyone has picked up on that yet.
Yeah.
Okay, Shibboleth. Yeah, I'm down with the Shibboleth. Let's do it. Is this a Tolkien essay? Or, like, did he write it?
No, this is something that Tolkien wrote.
Okay.
So what happens in this essay is, this is an essay in which it describes a sound shift that occurs in Quenya, in what's referred to as exilic Quenya, which is the form of Quenya that is spoken by the Noldor. And this sound shift specifically happens because Feanor among the Noldor, there is this sound shift happening from TH to S. And Feanor believes that this sound shift is happening as an intentional spite against him, Feanor.
Oh my God.
Yes, really.
So self-centered.
The mother name of his mother, Muriel, was Therinde. And the sound shift was from TH to S, making his mother's mother name Therinde. He believed that this was a slight by his half-brothers, Fingolfin and so forth. And he refused to use the sound change and made it a shibboleth, which is like a password or like a call sign to establish identity or membership in a group, that if you were one of his Noldor, you said Therinde, and all of those other motherfuckers said Therinde.
But dude, what if they have a gentle lisp like me and they both sound the same? What do I do?
Well, then you would have not been down with Feanor then.
Damn,
you would have gotten yourself in some trouble. So what that eventually ended up meaning was that the Quenya spoken by the Noldor that stayed in Valinor used the S, and the Quenya spoken by the exilic Quenya spoken by the Noldor in exile in Middle-earth used the TH.
Okay.
Some elements of various other Noldor, depending on where they landed on the political spectrum with regards to Feanor, used the various versions. Finarfin, for example, used TH because they were, out of kinship for certain people, namely the Vanyar and the Teleri, who still used it. But Galadriel fucking hated Feanor and preferred the other brother, so she used the S.
That's so awesome. I love that. It's such a, it's so shady. It's wonderful.
Yeah. And what's fun about this is the justification for all of this is that he wanted to have, is that Tolkien wanted to introduce a sound shift into some of the stuff he was writing in Quenya, and he needed a justification for why older versions of Quenya that he had been writing in had a TH and now it had an S. So we had to write a document to explain why older Quenya had a TH and now it had an S. Such so we wrote this whole in-universe document to explain what was going on.
Nerd. Nerd alert.
Anyway, so that's Quenya in... The Noldor speak Quenya in Valinor.
Mm-hmm.
They get kicked out of Valinor for being... Because Fëanor is an asshole. On his way out, you may recall, there is a thing called the Kinslayn. They get to the Teleri. They want the Teleri's boats. The Teleri say no. They kill the Teleri. Many Teleri. When they get to Beleriand, Fëanor's like, so just don't talk about it. Just don't talk about it. Don't talk about it. It's fine. Don't talk about it. But then he dies. Okay, and the sons of Fëanor are like, just don't talk about it. Just don't talk about it. It's fine. Don't talk about it. Well, somebody talks about it.
Yeah.
And eventually it gets back to Thingol. And Thingol, unsurprisingly, is pissed because these are his cousins. These are his kin. And he bans the speaking of Quenya in Beleriand.
Yeah, he's like, fuck you. I'm standing in a field. I'm looking at a hot girl. Now all of a sudden you're killing my cousins. Fuck you.
Yeah. Quenya remains spoken in a few places. Basically those controlled by the sons of Fëanor and basically Noldor specific kingdoms. But otherwise it is other than outside of specific places of scholarship, Quenya is not found as a spoken daily language in Beleriand as a result.
Two questions. So is this why when I asked you a few episodes ago, when I knew less what Galadriel was speaking, she's not speaking Quenya. She's speaking Sindarin because you're not allowed to speak Quenya. Is that right?
Because culturally in Beleriand, you would have been to get on with the other people, you would have been speaking. Now, mind you, she's a kind of a queen in her own realm. So she may have spoken Quenya in her own realm. But when speaking to other elves, yeah, she would have spoken Sindarin.
Okay. Were there Quenya place names that we know of that were like that remained or that were like changed because they were like no more?
I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know that.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting.
I know there were a lot of Quenya place names, but they may have been changed, very likely.
Yeah. Cool.
So that's the elven languages. Now we're going to talk about the languages of men.
Let's hope they're less complicated. Jeez.
So substantially. So the languages of men, we have a slightly less complicated descent. We have, what do we have? One, two. So there's sort of three original languages of men.
Okay.
We're not going to get as deep into these because a lot of these are many of these languages. I should have said this at the top. That was a mistake. I have not been talking about how well attested a lot of these languages are. Most of these languages, obviously Quenya, Sindarin, the various versions of them going back, many of them are, there's material for these, but most of these languages, like, you know, common Telerian, there's a few words. That's it.
Yeah.
Most of these are not fully developed languages by any stretch of the imagination. There's a few words here and there, a few sentences to sort of get a feel for the language.
Yeah.
Maybe some roots to indicate things like that. In some places, he would write like a chart showing five of these languages lined up and how they would compare to show like how the sounds evolved over time because he's a big fucking nerd. And he wanted to like play with the idea of the evolution of these languages. But most of these languages are not fully developed languages.
Yeah, they're just concepts of languages.
Yeah, exactly. Cool. So for the languages of men, there are sort of three concepts of the early languages of the Edain. There's Talisca, which we mentioned briefly last episode. And then there is the sort of language of the middlemen of Eriador and the language of the Northmen, which we don't have any more information on. They're okay. just sort of mentioned hypothetically. Talisca is the interesting one. We know a little bit about it. We know that there were a couple of dialects, one spoken by the House of Beor and one spoken by the House of Hador.
Mm-hmm.
The dialect spoken by the House of Hador would eventually evolve into a Dunayak.
Oh, cool.
So that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, I always like the word Adunayak. It's just fun to say. Yeah. Adunayak.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Talisca is also interesting because according to some of these language evolution charts, Talisca is itself evolved out of Avari, Kudzul, and the Orc languages, a sort of a melting pot.
Oh, wow.
Where those three languages kind of came into contact far in the east. And somewhere out of the admixture of those three things, we get Talisca.
Wow, that's really interesting.
Mm-hmm. So.
So is that like, is that the common speech that we hear in Lord of the Rings and some...
Eventually. So okay. Talisca is an ancient language.
Okay. That
by the time, even by the time of like the War of Wrath is basically gone. It's only a few people still speak it by then. Once Adunayak comes around, it's already faded almost to nothing.
Gotcha.
From Adunayak, we get two branches. We get Black Adunayak, which is evil. Ooh. There's a group of Numenoreans called the Black Numenoreans, which are sorcerers and pirates and have a bad reputation, as you can guess from their name.
They are really into like black metal.
Yes, yes.
Cool. There's, yeah, all right.
They had a dialect of Adunayak. And then there's Westron, which is the common language throughout all the Western lands of Middle-earth by the Third Age. Okay. And that is what basically everybody, if they're not speaking Sindarin, that's what they're speaking in Middle-earth in Lord of the Rings.
Okay, so like hobbits and stuff.
Yeah, the hobbits speak a dialect of Westron called Hobbitish.
Sorry, I talked over you. What is it called?
Hobbitish.
Oh, well, all right. That makes sense.
Yeah.
That's awesome. That's cute and lovely. Mm-hmm.
And then the last one we'll talk about is the Northmen languages was a sister language of Talisca, and one of its descendants was Rohirric.
Yeah, that's the one I gotta learn. It's where my boyfriend lives. It's cool.
Shut up. So kind of interesting in that Rohirric, for example, and Westron are not actual languages in Tolkien's Legendarium in the sense that he never created languages for them. They are represented in The Lord of the Rings with Middle English and Old English, I want to say. Let me double check that. Yeah, he used, maybe Westron actually had its own language. But yeah, I know Rohirric, for example, he used Middle English. And cool. Yeah. Adunayak is a language that there's a little bit of, as we talked about last episode. And then for the Elven languages, primitive Quendian, there's a fair bit, common Eldarin, like there's roots and stuff for those. Quenya obviously is a fairly large language.
Yeah.
Sindarin has a fair bit going on, but a lot of these other languages, Teleran, Nandoran, things like that, there are fragmentary.
Okay. That kind of makes sense, right? He didn't need more than what, you know, than the concept of it, perhaps.
Yeah. And then there's things like, there's a lot of other languages in the tree of tongues, as he refers to it.
Okay.
You also get things like Entish, and there's a lot of goofy languages on here. Where is it? I have
list of all the Do the dragons languages. Have their own dragon language?
No, they speak whatever language. Let's see here. Let's see if there's any other good ones on here.
I want to speak dragon. Wait, what's the dragon language?
There's Warg language. There's Thrush. There's the Black Speech, which I believe is a kind of orcish.
Yeah, didn't we talk about that? Ajnaj, your mom.
Orc black speech is basically another iteration of the concept of orcish. Dalish, which is a sister language to Rohirric. There's all the languages of the Haradrim and the Easterlings, the languages of the Losoth, which I honestly do not know anything about. They're another one of the they're just like a random people. I don't even know where they get mentioned. There's a lot of like weird little languages that he mentions and never gives anything, any interest, any real notes to. There's the Druug languages and the Dunlending languages.
Okay.
But again, these are all little fragmentary things that he mentions. I kind of focused on the languages that were more central to the narrative and that were actually to some degree attested.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. I mean, I would like to have a whole episode in which we speak only in Entish, but I don't know if anyone...
Whole sentences, maybe.
Did you just yawn because you were so bored by that? That was so rude of you.
I was saying it in Entish.
Oh, no. That was so good. Oh, damn it. Jude.
Nailed it.
God damn it. I'm so mad at you. That was a brilliant. Well, I mean, that's a very... it's not a tangled web, really. It is to me because it's the first time I'm hearing it. It's a lot. But when you sort of break it down and distill it down a little bit to kind of what ended up in what we know, you know, what we being, you know, the whole world knows of Tolkien, it's actually not that complicated.
Yeah, it's dense. This came out a lot denser than I thought it was going to be, but there's a lot there. And I think what I want people to take away from this is this was Tolkien's passion project.
Yeah.
And Tolkien didn't just create Quenya and Sindarin. He created all the languages back to primitive Quendian and all the languages around Sindarin and Quenya. He created the world in which these languages lived and the environment in which they lived and grew and developed.
So, he was a linguist, right? So that was his first love.
This was his bullshit. This was his jam. So
that's really cool. So do you think that he developed, I mean, I guess you could tell by the years of on the notes that he wrote, but like, did he often would develop things and then sort of regress them back the way linguists do, right? When they're trying to figure out proto languages, do you think he wrote did he work that way or did he start for the main part?
Both.
Like both? Okay. So it went both ways.
Yeah, he went back and forth.
Oh, he went there and back again? A linguist tale.
Badumch.
Thank you for the drum noise. I appreciate that. Man, that was so cool. So, all right, now what I would like is I really want to learn a few, like, cool phrases from these things. So, Jude, I would like you to please put out some kind of a... you know, listening thing for those of us who want to learn and teach me some cool phrases so that, you know, when I go to Middle Earth, I can ask where the subway stop is and, you know, how Duly to order noted. A piece of cheese pizza, you know?
I can probably do that. I just can't tell you how to ask where to find pants.
Right. Because, and maybe newer listeners don't know this inside joke. Okay. But like a long time ago, Jude got really interested in how to say the word pants in Quenya and lots of painstaking work, there is no word for pants.
I don't remember how we got onto it, but it somehow came up that I was attempting to translate something and discovered that there is no way to say pants in Quenya.
British people, we mean trousers, okay? Get your mind out of the gutter. We do not mean underpants.
Yeah.
Yep. Oh, is there a word for underpants, though?
No.
Are you telling me that the elves just wore nothing? Just a kilt. Is there a word for kilt? Okay, whatever.
I wouldn't be surprised. So
well, that was amazing.
That's what we've got for this week, for this episode. Off the top of my head, I don't remember what our next episode's going to be. So,
Well, actually, this episode is coming out in November of 2019. So we would love to invite you in December of 2019 to join us. We're going to cover, the Father Christmas letters, because that's topical and that's holiday-ish, right? We're excited.
Yes, I'm excited about that. I have not read the Father Christmas letters in several years. Yay, so I'm really excited to read them again.
I mean, I've never read them. So I'm so excited to read them. I can't wait.
Cool.
So join us. It's going to be holly and jolly, hopefully, or it'll not be. Who knows?
We'll see.
We'll see. We're not time travelers, people. Don't ask me to be. Okay? We did not make that promise to you.
Yep. The road may go ever on and on, but this episode is over.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please leave us a review on iTunes. Come on, guys. It helps increase our visibility. You can find us on the web at www.podcast.atherbeth.com. You can find the show on Twitter at @atherbeth_cast. Jude can be found at @AramidicJude, and I can be found at @TheNorthFour. Title music is Lord of the Devil Rings by Pony Music, courtesy of Pond 5. Namarie.